Welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. As in most of life, managing expectations is critical. And those expectations can touch anything from birthday gifts to macroeconomic trends. And December's jobs report did not meet expectations for, apparently, most economists. Because according to a Reuters survey, they expected 178,000 jobs. Instead, we got 156,000 people finding work in America in December. Now, that said, December is not typically a month where the government does a lot of hiring. And the private payroll report that happened earlier in the week was at 153,000 jobs, pretty close. So expectations were seemingly mismanaged, and that contributed to a desultory day on the Dow. My next chat is with an economic analyst, and we're going to tee up 2017 for jobs, for growth, for Silicon Valley's role in the economy, and even if Fed Chair Janet Yellen will have more time to work on her golf game very soon. We start with the final jobs report of the Obama administration.
Sure. It's Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst with Bankrate in Washington, D.C. And I always encourage people also to check out my Twitter account, which is at Hamrickisms.
Mr. Hamrick, thank you for giving us time this morning. It's only 36 minutes after the last Obama administration jobs report. What were the numbers like? Let's start there.
Well, slow and steady wins the race, as they say, and that is very descriptive of this jobs report, meaning that we had a little more than 150,000 jobs added on the month, largely as expected. And as we close the books on 2016, we know now that the year did not produce as many jobs as the year before, and we expect further, let's say, reduction in hiring in the year ahead. But that's fine. This recovery began in mid-2009. You would expect it to be sort of more plodding along at this point rather than setting the world on fire.
That's a good point, because 75 straight months of job growth is not bad. I think I saw the 1939 was the last time that that happened. When you have that kind of sustained growth, like you said, slow and steady, how does that impact what the Federal Reserve could do moving into 2017?
Well, if let's say there were normal times at hand, I think the Fed would continue to view the world as largely as what it has experienced in recent years. But as we know, the political landscape has shifted dramatically, and I think the Fed is ready to adjust to that. What does that mean? If successful in terms of getting done what they expect to do, both the incoming Trump administration and Republicans who lead Congress expect to put a number of measures in place that are aimed at helping the economy and helping to get more people back into the workforce who haven't participated in the recovery. Those fiscal measures, as we like to say, would be relatively new, given the fact that the President and the Congress have not been able to largely agree over the past 8 years. So the Fed may have to raise interest rates more than it has. And in some ways, I think you could say that would be a good problem to have, because the inability to raise interest rates over the last several years has been representative of not only the challenges in the global economy, but in some ways, some of the fragility of the U.S. economy that remains after the financial crisis.
You know, Mark, you mentioned right there a dynamic we may have forgotten about, and you hinted at fiscal policy pairing up with something called monetary policy. We haven't seen monetary policy in a while. So if we do get some, no matter what direction it takes, when you pair that up with fiscal policy coming out of the Fed, does that tee up for a continued 2.2% growth for 2017?
The expectation is that we will see growth that's above the 2% level for the year ahead, and we've been stuck in a pattern of largely 1% to 2% for a number of years. And the complaint, although expressed subtly by Fed Chair Janet Yellen and her predecessor Ben Bernanke, has been essentially, hey, we're the only game in town because Congress and the President can't get their political act together to enact some measures that would help the economy. So that they could, let's say, exit the scene and adjust interest rates accordingly to what the President and the Congress are doing, I think they would like to be in that position. And there are some, let's say, unintended benefits of that as well, because with abnormally low interest rates where we still are, that means the Fed does not have as much ammunition in place should a recession or some sort of downturn or financial crisis materialize. And as we know, lowering interest rates is one of the main tools in the Fed's toolbox when it needs to, let's say, squeeze the trigger and help the economy. It likes to have some bullets in the holster.
Makes sense to me. Mark, I have a quick question for you. For a perspective from an East Coast economist and an economic advisor, okay, you're inside the Beltway. How does the labor market look toward Silicon Valley when it comes to job destruction slash creation, or vice versa? I mean, just in a zeitgeist kind of way.
Yeah. Well, sometimes your greatest strength is also your greatest weakness, and I think that applies to technology in the sense that we know that this is the engine of the U.S. economy and a service-based economy. We want that to continue. We want not only the smaller companies, but also the giants like Google, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft on down the line to continue to set the blazing pace that they have, and we hope that obviously there will be other new innovators on the scene as well. But as we also know, disruption causes its own problems as well as opportunities, and the problems occur with, let's say, the unintended consequences that have to do with marginalizing other workers, the fact that consumers aren't always even aware the pace of change is as rapid and as dramatic as it is, and frankly, the government is often a number of steps behind in adjusting as well, whether it's relating to things like training, but also taxation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and regulation for sure. Okay, my last question will be an inside the beltway kind of question, and this is a gut check. Janet Yellen, you mentioned the chair of the Federal Reserve. How does her 2017 seem to be shaping up?
I think for Janet Yellen, the outlook for 2017 is whether she's writing the final chapter in her book as being Fed chair, because candidate Donald Trump has expressed some criticism of her work there. I do think that there is, however, a chance that he might eventually take another view and eventually see that he thinks that she's done a pretty good job as head of the Federal Reserve and might think otherwise that perhaps he should bring her back. That remains to be seen. But at the moment, the U.S. economy is humming right along, and the Fed has been the primary actor in helping to make that happen. And to make a change for the sake of change might be, I don't know, it doesn't seem like a great idea to me, but obviously that's one of the powers of the presidency, is to appoint who you want on the Federal Reserve and then hope that the Senate will confirm your appointees.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, she also pointed out that she's not supposed to be paired with politics. So
right.
We'll
that's
see.
Right.
You know, I will say this, though. Chair Yellen is definitely heads down right now, because she gave me a very polite refusal to be on the show this week because of her quote-unquote workload. She's unable to join us this week. So we'll try again maybe next week or maybe next month. Maybe after the next rate hike. I don't know. We'll see what happens there.
Or after she's no longer in office.
Well, she's back in Berkeley, and then I can get her in studio with me.
There you go.
Mr. Hamburg, thanks a lot for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks so much.
That was Mark Hamrick. He's senior economic analyst for Bankrate.com, and he's based in Washington, D.C. His Twitter is at Hamrickisms. My Twitter, for that matter, is at KGOJason. This is our first live-to-tape Techonomics show of 2017, so we wanted to get things started right with this year's first, This Week in Elon Musk. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast, Making Manufacturing Cool Again. Elon Musk got his Gigafactory up and running in Nevada this week. The factory started producing battery cells with new technology behind them at the battery factory outside of Reno, Nevada, with a mix of cheers and worry. For Tesla bulls, the cheers are that the factory is actually producing and online as expected. Usually with leading technology companies, especially Elon Musk's, delayed gratification is common. The cost of capital should also come down for Tesla. That's going to help the bottom line. And that's mostly because these new batteries are not just for the PowerPack home battery systems, but for the mass-produced Model 3 sedan. At $35,000 for the base price, Tesla is hoping that the Model 3 will get more market share for the company. The Model 3 is expected later this year, but if the past is prologue, it'll likely be early next year. Analysts and investors are all over the map for Tesla's share price. Known bull for Tesla, Morgan Stanley, has a target price of $242 a share. More bearish is Goldman Sachs. They peg Tesla shares at just $190 each. And on Friday, Tesla was trading around the $225 mark. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Techonomics. We heartily thank all of our guests, and here's the rundown. We had author Leanne Jacob talking up her new book, Beautiful Money, A Holistic Approach to Increasing Your Net Worth. We also had James Cassell talking about the middle market, where indications of job growth start to show up fast when mergers and acquisitions pick up. Then it was more jobs talk with Tom Gimbel, founder of LaSalle Networks. It's a talented recruitment company. And, of course, Mark Hamrick of Bankrate.com. He helped us tee up the Fed and jobs for 2017. We have links to each of this week's segments, as well as all of our past segments at kgoradio.com/techonomics. We also have related links to this and past shows at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. We also post a playlist of the music we use for each week's show there, too. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.